Hello and welcome to Gilmore Ball Z, the podcast where I show my wife Dragon Ball Z, she shows me Gilmore Girls, and we try to find some kind of common ground. I'm Grant.
And I'm Paige.
And this week we watched episode 61 of Dragon Ball Z Kai, and season 3, episode 8 of Gilmore Girls. But before we get into that, we have a couple donors to thank for giving money to the Gohan and Rory Book Club Fund. So, just real quick thanks to Adam O'Brien, Sherman Belton, Greg Scher, and Dean and Mindy Anderson.
I think we've talked before about seeing each other tag their significant others and things. I think this is the first time we've had people who are dating donate to the book club fund, one right after the other.
This is true. So Ansley Jones also donated. Thank you for your donation. And she wanted to pass along the message, Sherman, I love you. Isn't that nice?
Yeah. I don't know if that's Ansley saying that she loves Sherman or us saying that we love Sherman, but, you know, there are many kinds of love.
We all love Sherman. Anyway, so as I said, we watched episode 61 of Dragon Ball Z Kai and season 3, episode 8 of Gilmore Girls. So, Paige, why don't you start us off? What happened this week on Dragon Ball Z Kai?
Yeah, this week on Dragon Ball Z Kai, Vegeta beat up a fat baby.
I really want to take the Always Sunny title card of that. Just Vegeta beats up a fat baby.
No, but it was actually a lot of stuff happened this episode. So, if you remember from last week, Goku was getting beat up by a fat baby because he had a mysterious heart virus, and he was having his power sucked by Android Fat Baby. Vegeta, in the last minute in this episode, he saves Goku and starts fighting the fat baby himself. Piccolo, who had previously seemed injured, pops up and says, okay, that was just a feint. I was trying to save Goku, but Vegeta ruined my plan. Gohan's like, oh, so you weren't hurt? By a fight like that? No! Shut up, you stupid child! What do you think?
Yeah, Piccolo's just like, no, of course not. And you're an idiot for thinking so.
Yeah, he's not even offended. He's just insulting. So in this episode, a lot of it is taken up by Vegeta. Vegeta in this fight goes Super Saiyan for the first time that the audience sees it. But in a flashback, we learn this is not the first time that Vegeta's gone Super Saiyan. He goes, basically to become Super Saiyan, what we're told is that you have to be pure of heart somehow. The Z Fighters had assumed that that meant pure of good heart, but Vegeta points out that's not the case. He, in the most, like, he just says...
He's something like, I'm pure evil to the core.
Yeah, which, you know, he's pure something. He's pure edgelord to the core is what he proves. Because he just thinks he's super cool for thinking he's evil. Really, he just purely hates Goku, because while he's we get a flashback to when he was training on some alien planet fighting meteors, and as he's focusing on his rage and hate, he owns his self-hatred. So he's just pure self-loathing and edgelord, and that is enough to get him to become a Super Saiyan. And the thing is, the Android Fat Baby didn't get much of a chance to see what a Super Saiyan could really do, because almost as soon as Goku started fighting, going Super Saiyan rapidly accelerated his heart disease, which is a little bit of an answer we get from the question we had last episode, that going Super Saiyan does accelerate it. And he almost immediately had to tap out and get his powers sucked. So Vegeta makes a very good show of beating Android Fat Baby up. And every time you think I'm going to go for the number. No, I know what it is. I'm not going to say it. It's obviously working to some degree. Fat Baby's getting just marks on his face, which are the universal Dragon Ball Z sign of getting beat up, because you don't actually show any bodily injury. You just get a little bit messy. And what Vegeta eventually does is beats him into the earth. There's a crater that looks to be about 15, 20 feet deep. And they get in a fight in this crater. Because what Android Fat Baby does is he grabs on to Vegeta's hands and says, I've got you now, I'm going to suck your power, and you can't escape. And Vegeta says, fine, sure, great, can't escape, and kicks him in the face. And then he doesn't kangaroo kick or anything, he just keeps his feet there on Android Fat Baby's face. And as Android Fat Baby is gorging himself on Vegeta power, he keeps pushing with his feet until he pushes Android Fat Baby back and breaks off Android Fat Baby's hands, which are the place where the nodes are that suck the power. So by knocking off his hands, he cuts off Android Fat Baby's connection to power sucking, which is the only thing Android Fat Baby really wants to do is drink sweet power milk. And without his hands, this Android Fat Baby is confused. Android Fat Baby is upset. Android Fat Baby is...
How many more times can you say Android Fat Baby in the synopsis?
Oh, a lot. Don't challenge me. This is my natural cadence. He's confused. He's upset. And he doesn't know what to do. He might have had a chance to get himself back to power. But before he can do that, Vegeta jumps up and then hits him with an attack he calls Super Vegeta's Big Bang Attack, which obviously takes him out, because the next thing we see is Android Fat Baby's head disattached from Android Fat Baby body. And Vegeta, even though his power has been sucked, he goes up to Android Russian Hat and says, "Come at me, bro. What have you got?" And Android Russian Hat can obviously see that Vegeta's power has been sapped, but he also has the tactical might to take out Android Fat Baby. So, what's his game here? Android Russian Hat decides he doesn't want to find out and runs away, which Piccolo points out is the perfect thing that Vegeta wanted. When, like, Vegeta obviously doesn't have enough power to take him on right now. He grabs a Senzu Bean from Krillin later. But by making him retreat, then he makes Android Russian Hat both think he's powerful, but also gives himself a chance. He regains the power to fight Android Russian Hat later. So that's where we end the fighter's, you know, plot, is that Android Russian Hat has run away. Super Saiyan Vegeta is going to chase after him and fight him. And the other fighters are kind of trying to decide what to do and how to change the future and not die. If you're Gohan, the point is changing the future so people don't die. If you're Krillin, the point is to change the future so Krillin doesn't die. Yamcha took Goku home to take his heart medicine, so hopefully Goku will be back. The other thing that happened in this episode is Bulma decided she wants a closer look, so she bullies Yajirobe into taking her and Baby Trunks in to get a better look at the androids, and uses Yajirobe's scarf as a diaper. That was this week on Dragon Ball Z. Grant, what happened this week on Gilmore Girls?
So, this week on Gilmore Girls, we picked up more or less right where we left off. It was unclear if this was a couple days later and just their sleep schedules were still weird, or if like this was right after.
Well, the thing is, the dance marathon started Saturday at 6 a.m. and ended Sunday at 6 a.m. Rory had to go to school, so presumably this was the next Monday morning. They'd had a night of sleep, but their sleep schedules were still wonky. They couldn't quite decide what they wanted from this plot.
Yeah, well, either way, so we get a nice opening scene of Lorelai and Rory both kind of delirious and sleep drunk as they're trying to make their way over to Luke's. And when they get there, like, Jess comes out, and it's very awkward. You know, Rory and Jess do the whole, like, oh, hi.
Hi.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
Hi. How's
hi.
It going? Hi. How are you? And so then...
No, it's just hi and bye. That is the only words they say in that interchange.
Yeah, and so then, like, Jess finds an excuse to spirit himself away, you know, Rory has to run to school and whatever. And so Luke's saying, like, what the hell was that all about? And Lorelai's like, Rory and Jess are dating now. And Luke doesn't quite know what to make of this. But later in the episode, we see that, like, Rory arrives by herself at the diner, and Luke is just being weirdly nice to her. Like, obviously, he's always nice to Rory, but he's being weirdly friendly. Like, Rory, it's so nice that you're here. Oh, Jess, look who it is. It's Rory. And then Rory and Jess sneak upstairs, and they're hanging out upstairs, and it's still kind of awkward, and they're not quite sure what to do, and...
They've had so much tension growing now that it's released. It's the old, if a dog caught a car, what would it do with it kind of scene.
Yeah, and so they're just like, I mean, do we go over there, or do we, like, I don't do, should we make out, or what? And then, you know, they're finally about to kiss, and Luke busts in, and Rory runs off, and so Luke goes, like, full Papa Bear on Jess and starts giving him the whole, like, you have to be sitting on separate pieces of furniture, you're not allowed on either of your beds, you know, you need to always have the door open, I don't want you, you know, just, like, being very protective.
Get her home on time.
Yeah, get her home on time, being very protective of Rory. And Jess is like, aren't I supposed to be your kid, not Rory? And he's like, whatever, you know, I know what you're like. Just be good to her. And he expresses to Lorelai earlier, like, this could be a good thing because Jess is kind of tough sometimes, and you know, this Rory rubbing off on him would be good for him, which is what he'd expressed way earlier when it was possible that maybe they were a thing. So, like, that's a thing, and there's a whole big actual Gilmore Girls plot that I'll get to in a minute, but at the end of the episode, after they've done a whole bunch of stuff, they come back to the diner, and Jess makes some excuse about he has to go pick up a car part that was waiting for him at Gypsy's, and Rory needs to go study, and they both disappear with a nice 5-minute stagger. And Luke...
brags.
Yeah, Luke is like, yeah, I gave Jess a talking to. And, you know, I'm going to make sure he's not gonna do anything untoward with Rory. And Lorelai's like...
I'll watch him like a hawk.
Yeah, no, they're never going to get past me. Like, you realize that they're together, like, right now. Like, what? Like, okay, Jess had to go find a car part in the middle of the night. And Rory had to go study when we just got here. They're off at some predetermined location. And Luke freaks out of, oh, what are they doing? Oh, no, you're right, they are. This is horrible. And he's like, what happened to Rory rubbing off on Jess? No, Jess is an animal, you know? And he's just suddenly so worried that Jess is going to, like, sully Rory's virtue or something. And he runs off to go find them, and Lorelai's like, eh, whatever. Because Lorelai has, you know, consigned herself to the fact that she's not crazy about Jess. He's not her favorite person in the world, but this is what's happening now. And really, at the end of the day, she doesn't say as much, but it's better for her to be supportive than not. Because if she's not supportive, then that'll just drive Rory even closer to Jess.
And she also trusts Rory.
But, you know, from all perspectives, it's a smarter idea to just trust Rory to handle the situation properly. So Rory and Jess, you know, they meet at Gypsy's, which is, you know, empty because it's the middle of the night. And they make out some, and it's good. And then Rory is like, wait, I need to go right now. Don't worry, we're still cool. I really enjoyed this. Let's do this again. But I gotta go right real quick. I'll be back. And she runs off. And she climbs a tree and goes up to Dean's window.
Because nothing says, I have a new boyfriend, like climbing into your ex-boyfriend's window.
Yes. So she taps on the window and Dean's just like, what are you doing here? She's like, oh, well, I came through the window because I was worried your mom hates me. And, oh, I haven't told my mom yet. And blah, blah, blah. And she's trying to make small talk. And he's just like, Rory, what do you want? What are you doing here? And Rory owns up and she apologizes. She says, you know, everything you said about me was true. You were really good to me, which, but okay. I really enjoyed being with you. I really did care about you. And I want you to know that that's true. And I am sorry about the way things ended between us. And I understand that they have to end because everything you said is true. But I am going to miss what we had. And I hope that someday you won't hate me for it. And Dean, in the perfect WB line, says, yeah, I hope so too. And then just glares at her as he slowly closes the window. Oh, Dean, such a little drama puppy. And yeah, so Rory slinks back home. So that's the B plot. The A plot that concerns most of the episode is that Richard kind of corners Rory and says, hey, I'm having a reunion of the Whiffin Poofs, which are totally a real name for a real thing.
They are a real name for a real thing.
Wait, are they actually a real thing? She's Googling. I'm scared. Oh my god, they're an actual thing. I was certain that was made up.
It gets better. Look at this picture.
Oh my god, that they're a real thing. I'm sorry, I need to stop for a second. Okay, so apparently there's an a cappella group in the real life Yale College that is a real...
Yale University.
The real life Yale University in the actual universe in which we occupy has an a cappella group called the Whiffin Poofs. This is a real thing. You can Google it.
They are American's oldest collegiate a cappella group.
Well, with a name like a Whiffin Poofs, I'm not surprised. Wow, okay. My mind was just blown. Yeah, so there's a real thing in the universe that you and I both live in called the Whiffin Poofs, and Richard was a member. And
in the fake Whiffin.
In the fake Whiffin, yeah. He was a... For all we know, Edward Herman was in the Whiffin Poofs. I don't know if he went to Yale, but anyway.
I don't think he went to Yale.
So he's going to a Whiffin Poof reunion, and he's like, Rory, why don't you come along? You know, I can show you my alma mater, and it'll be fun, and we'll hang out, and it'll be good. And then when I go to my stodgy, boring dinner, you and your mother can go do something fun. And Rory's like, sure. So they go.
I mean, she's a little uncomfortable, but she agrees to do it because she loves her grandpa.
She's a little trepidatious at first, but then when he starts talking about how I really want you to see campus and everything, she can see how heartfelt he is that... It's just really important to him because it's important. Like, the campus is important to him, and she's important to him, and he's getting really sentimental about it, and she realizes, oh, okay, it's important to him, we'll go. She does the usual Rory thing, right? Yeah. So Lorelai fights it at first, but then, you know, like, he's manipulating you like he always does. And Rory's like, no, no, it'll be fine. We'll go. Don't worry about it. She says, okay. And so they over-prepare and get all their stuff together, and they go on this road trip down to New Haven to visit Yale. And we get a really nice scene of the four of them walking around campus, and we get a little peek into what Emily and Richard were like in college. Apparently, Richard slayed in college. He would take all kinds of girls to the art gallery and impress them with his knowledge of art and how sophisticated he was. And he was a dog, apparently.
Well, and apparently it went well with one particular lady.
Yeah, yeah. We find out that Richard was engaged at one point to some girl, and Emily set her sights on him and decided that she must have him, and it managed to break up his engagement. And she's like, oh, I didn't steal him away. I simply offered him a choice, and he chose me. And he's like, oh, well, wearing that dress, who couldn't? And we get the story of how they got engaged. How Richard and Emily got engaged was delightful, where apparently he wasn't committing to what they were going to do over break because he was planning to surprise her by inviting her to come meet his parents and then propose. And so she was calling him a spineless jellyfish, at which point he said, oh, for the love of God, reached into his pocket, pulled out the ring, gave it to her and said, here.
Well, I think he threw it at her.
He threw it at her. She opened it, looked at it, said, fine, and gave it back to him, and they've been happy ever since. And so we get them recounting this story and then kissing over a trash can where the bench where it happened used to be, which is adorable.
It's adorable.
So we get some prime adorable Richard, and so now it is time for Richard to poop right in the middle of the Jell-O, because they start walking around, you know, it was some central administration building. And, oh, what do you know? It's the dean of admissions office. Hey, I'm friends with the dean of admissions, and
apparently he was a whiff and poof.
Apparently the dean of admissions was a whiff and poof, which makes sense. You know, if we're in a world where the whiff and poofs are a real thing, whatever. He was able to squeeze in a meeting. He insisted on meeting you after I told him all about you, and it was at about 3:00. Oh, what do you know? It is 3:00. In you go, and he tries to push Rory into the admissions office to do an interview for Yale. And Lorelai says, like, Rory, you don't have to do this. She says, it's okay, Mom. I'll do it. I'll do it. She goes in. She does it. And Lorelai lays into Richard. Rightfully so.
And the other thing is, it's clear in this scene that Emily didn't know.
Yeah. I gotta say, anybody, like, go back and watch that scene and just watch Emily's face during that entire exchange. Because it's just that blank, like, oh my God, it's happening. I should do something. I can't move. Oh, he's doing it again. I'm going to murder this man in his sleep tonight. Like, it's beautiful. So Lorelai lays into Richard, like, how could you do this? How could you spring this on her? She's going to Harvard. She doesn't want to go to Yale. You just had to do this whole manipulative thing to get her to do what you want her to do.
You don't know how this works.
Yeah, and Richard fights back of like, look, she doesn't have to go to Yale. She should just know what her options are. And you don't understand how these colleges work. You don't understand how the Ivy League system works. And, you know, like, even if she doesn't want to go to Yale, if she applies to Yale and gets into Yale, that will help her if she wants to get into Harvard, because these schools tend to be very competitive, and you wouldn't know that because you didn't go to college.
I don't think that's a thing.
I'm not sure if that's a thing. They get into a big fight about it, and she's like, you know what? I'm calling a cab. We're going home. And Emily tries to follow her and talk her out of it and point out, you know, well, Richard, you know, your father is right about this and this and that, and, you know, Yale is a good school, and it is true that, you know, these things, you know, he understands these things work better than we do, and blah, blah, blah. And Laura's like, I don't care. Like, he always does this, and I always forget why we have trouble having such a good relationship, and then he does something like this, and I remember. And she's like, aren't you mad at him? And Emily's like, yes, but that's between him and me. Like, let's not worry about it. So then we come back to Richard, who's...
And we get one more thing from Emily. She drops the point that you're so mad, you're not even realizing that if Rory went to Yale, she could stay home.
Yeah. Richard is waiting, and Rory comes out of her interview, and it seems like it went well and everything. And so Richard says, like, hey, so how'd it go? And then Rory tears into Richard. Like, how could you do this to me? Like, how could you spring this on me?
Well, Yale's a good school.
He's like, oh, yeah, Yale's a good school, dear. I thought you were like, she says, yeah, I know Yale's a good school. I would have come prepared if I knew there was an interview. If you told me you set me up an interview, I would have gone along with it because you're right that it is a good school and it would be good for me to interview there. And I would have brought my transcripts and I would have dressed nicer and I would have brought letters of recommendation and I would have, like, you know, mentally prepared myself for this. And Richard's just completely dumb. He wasn't prepared for that line of questioning. He was ready for Lorelai. He was not ready for Rory. Mm-hmm. And that totally throws him off guard. And so Lorelai's like, come on, Rory, we're going home. The cab's here. And she's like, okay. And she leaves. Mm-hmm. And so, and then Richard's like, what? And then Emily's like, oh, don't you, like, you know, don't you start. And it cuts away when you know that Richard's about to get laid into by Emily, too. So, like,
it's beautiful.
It's beautiful. Richard just gets three generations of Gilmore Smackdown, one right after the other. And
he just got Gilmore Girled.
He did just get Gilmore Girled. And, you know, much as I adore Richard, he deserves it.
100%.
100%.
Well, and the thing is, you also love when Richard is clueless.
I do also love when Richard is clueless and horrible. Yes, it is nice. So they go home and, you know, so all the stuff with Jess and Dean happens. And then the episode ends with Rory sitting up in bed, and she just cracks open a couple of those Yale pamphlets and starts reading about Yale. And then we cut to Lorelai, and she's reading about Yale. And so, yeah, Emily, you're right. Emily planted that seed in Lorelai's head of, like, maybe Yale wouldn't be so bad. So now both of our Gilmore girls are thinking, maybe Yale isn't a terrible school. Who would have thought? And that's basically what happened on this week's Gilmore Girls. What did you think of this week's Dragon Ball Z Kai?
You know, I enjoyed it. I am happy anytime there's tactics.
I love this. I love this episode so much.
No, this is a good episode. I'm 100% on board with everyone who is more interested in Vegeta instead of Goku. Goku's journey to become a Super Saiyan was more interesting than most of what Goku does. But the approach that Vegeta has to being a Super Saiyan, other than his edgelord, I'm pure evil. It's like, no, you're not, buddy. You're a sad, lonely man who had a one-night stand to have a sad, lonely baby. Like, we know who you are. But the fact that he, at the same time, is incredibly, like, wears his vulnerabilities on his sleeve, but at the same time is so proud, mm-hmm. is a really interesting, complex thing. I mean, the fact that he said that he owned his self-hatred as the impetus, as, like, the drive to become a Super Saiyan, it's like, oh, so what you're saying is if you got the therapy you needed, the Earth would have been destroyed. Okay, no, that's not how that works, buddy. If you'd gotten the therapy you needed, you'd be an even stronger Saiyan. But that's okay.
Yeah, like, I have to say, it's a strange moment of vulnerability from Vegeta.
But it's such...
To openly, and not just to have, like, the why can't I beat Kakarot moment when he's in private, but he openly admits to everybody who will listen in the battle of, I became a Super Saiyan by owning how much I hate myself.
Yeah.
Like, that is a very strange moment of vulnerability for Vegeta, cloaked in this weird layer of bravado.
I don't know, like, but it's not that weird. We all know that guy, and it's not always a man, but, like, we all know that person who says, oh, I'm a loser and I hate myself. And just, like, they, like, sometimes it's just so someone will say, oh, no, you're not, but sometimes it's because if they keep throwing things out about themselves that are bad, no one else can throw it back at them. Like, this is the defense of, if I hit myself first, you can't hit me. Like, if I talk about my self-loathing and self-hatred, it's on the table. You can't hurt me with it.
That's true.
So, it's definitely more interesting. And as I said earlier, tactics in Dragon Ball are my jam. Mm-hmm. Like, using what his enemy thought was an advantageous position to deliver the crushing blow was great. Convincing, like, bluffing with Android Russian hat was great. Like, it's Piccolo going, like, you idiot, I was fine was great. And the other thing I really liked is we got good Bulma this episode.
We did get good Bulma this episode.
You know, Bulma is a weird lady. She doesn't seem to be a great mother, because forget the diaper bag. She was driving towards a mushroom cloud because she sees the mushroom cloud when Vegeta launches his Big Bang attack and says, that's probably where the fire is, and goes straight towards it with her baby. But the thing is, she quickly pulls the I'm an innocent flower act, but immediately afterwards she's like, yeah, I'm not like anyone else. Like, normal people would run away, but I'm not normal people, and dives straight for the fire. And if she could keep that kind of drive and, you know, combine it with her intelligence.
Yeah, where was that during the Namek saga?
Right? I like when Bulma has fire.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actual fire inside of her, not just privilege.
Yeah, and I my memory's a little fuzzy, but I feel like we will get more of that Bulma as time goes on. Most complaints about Bulma stem from the Namek Saga, because in the Namek Saga, she's pretty intolerable.
Yeah, so I enjoyed myself.
Yeah, I have a note here that's just, God, Vegeta is so cool.
I don't know if I'd say that, but I wouldn't not say that.
This is definitely my favorite Vegeta moment in the series.
That's fair.
Yeah, there are definitely other cool Vegeta moments. And, like, again, same thing with, like, was saying with Trunks before. People are going to come out of the woodwork of all the other cool stuff Vegeta has done and will do. But for me personally, this is my favorite moment that Vegeta has in the whole series. Just, do you feel fear, Android? It's just great.
Well, and I think you've talked before about how this was kind of an important moment for you as a kid because your cousin...
That's true. I didn't know when I was very, very young, when I hadn't seen very much Dragon Ball Z, I think this was before it even aired on Toonami. This is when the Ocean dub was airing on UPN, right? So this is before most people's exposure to Dragon Ball Z. Mm-hmm. I had seen a little bit of it when it was on UPN, up to like the Saiyan in the beginning of the Namek sagas. And we were hanging out with my cousin at some family function, and this was like the 90s, and he was getting the...
And he was older.
He was older, yeah. He's my oldest cousin. He's the oldest of that generation. And he was getting the Japanese dubs. And this was like in the 90s, that was still a big deal that you could get the Japanese dubs. So he was like, hey, you guys want to see some Dragon Ball Z that hasn't aired in America yet? And me and my brothers were like, yes. Like, you want to see Vegeta do something really cool? He's like, yes. And so he showed us this fight. Of just, like, it was just Vegeta screaming in Japanese and then turning into a Super Saiyan and then the flashback of, and my cousin was saying, like, yeah, so see, these androids have come and, you know, they were warned from the future, and, like, he was explaining this to us. So this is one of my early Dragon Ball Z memories, is seeing this way ahead of time and having no idea what was going on.
Yeah.
I think that this episode, on top of just being really fucking cool how he takes out Android 19, Android Fat Baby, Vegeta's growth in this episode is very apparent.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically, you know, when he powers, as he's powering up and turning into a Super Saiyan, he specifically says, like, what you androids don't understand is that power at the scale that Kakarot and I are on cannot be calculated. And it's like, literally, we've completed the journey from when he first showed up and was like, oh, his power level's over 9,000. And now he's saying, power levels are bullshit. You can't calculate this stuff. It's about what's in your feelings. It's about your emotions and your pride and your skill, right?
Well, and he also put himself on the level of Goku. Like, his goal is still to beat Goku. His goal has pretty much always been to beat Goku. But before, it's, why is this lowly child being able to beat me? I'm a Saiyan prince. I'll be able to get to the level where I can beat him and set everything right. Like, his whole point was the Saiyan order was being upset and he should be at the top of it.
Yeah.
And now he's saying, my power and Kakarot's power are top, and the reason he wants to beat Goku is not because he wants to set the Saiyan power orders back in line, but it's because he wants to be the best.
Yeah, he wants to be the very best like no one ever was, and yeah, he respects Goku's strength, which obviously he would after Goku killed Frieza, right? So that plus the whole, like, self-hatred thing, is we get a much more aware Vegeta, and wiser is a strange way to put it, but a more...
emotionally intelligent? No.
No, but... A more with it Vegeta, right? Which I'm down for.
So what did you think of this week's Gilmore Girls?
I really like this week's Gilmore Girls.
I knew you were going to like this week's Gilmore Girls.
I mean, you know, obviously it's a Richard episode and I'm easy like that. But I think it was an episode where we really got to see Richard from all sides.
Mm-hmm.
Because we got to see him being a good grandfather and we got to see him being a good husband, and we got to see him even being a good dad to a certain extent, and we also got to see him being not good at all three of those things. I really like when we get to see both Richard and Emily as people,
mm-hmm.
and I think that them talking about their dating life, we got some of that. There was a great scene where Lorelai kind of sarcastically is like, oh great, what are we going to see next? The vending machine where I was conceived, and Emily kind of smiles. Where it's like, oh my. Well, maybe Lorelai wasn't conceived at a vending machine, but Emily definitely has a certain vending machine in mind.
Yeah.
And just them talking about their young dating life, it it makes me want just like the one episode of just young, suave Richard in college, right? Just to see him like going out with his best dame.
Well, and they don't fit in the box that Lorelai puts them in, and they put themselves in. Like, they had a life where he was the young man about campus, and she had a life where she was stealing the men away, apparently.
Apparently.
At least Richard.
Yeah. So I really liked that. And I really liked that the argument was one that you can see from all sides.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not defending Richard's actions in this episode, because...
Richard was wrong, but that doesn't mean he was entirely wrong.
Exactly. Richard, the way Richard went about it was wrong. And both Emily and, like, both Emily and Rory make the great point to Richard that we could have done this without having to do any weird deception. And really, it was that Richard underestimated Lorelai's emotional maturity. And he assumed if he was upfront about it, Lorelai would forbid it. When really, Lorelai would complain, but she would do what she usually does and just tell Rory, you don't have to do this. And Rory would say, no, I want to do this, and it'd be fine. And yep. Lorelai might be a little huffy, but it'd be fine. And Richard could have come out of this not looking like the bad guy. But his own biases and predispositions about his daughter led him to think that a certain course of action was necessary when it wasn't.
Well, and he wanted to save the thing he wanted, and he was scared of losing that thing.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that aspect of how this episode played out. I really liked that Rory was willing to stand up to Richard, which obviously she's done before, because he went there when he was mean to Dean, but I thought that she was really relatable and believable in that scene. And I liked the Luke plot. I liked Luke getting really protective of Rory. I thought it was really cute. And just, I always like when Luke thinks he is in control of the situation and he totally isn't. And it gives Lorelai an opportunity to kind of flex at what she's good at, because we like to joke about Lorelai not being the most responsible parent or the most responsible adult in the world, but she knows her daughter, and she knows about these kinds of things, about dating and sneaking out and stuff like that. And she understands that these things are going to happen because she did them.
Mm-hmm.
But she also understands that Rory's a good kid and that Rory's not going to make the same mistakes that she did. And even though they don't go into it, at the back of her head, she knows that even if Rory does make the same mistakes that she did, she'll be okay because Lorelai's doing okay right now.
Mm-hmm.
And she's obviously just a little more worldly in that particular regard than Luke. And so I thought that was kind of nice. I gotta give props to Alexis Bledel when Dean is slowly closing the window. Alexis Bledel's given some top-notch puppy eyes. She just looks like a hurt, kicked little kitten. It was delightful. She knows what she's good at. And yeah, that's pretty much what I thought of this week's Gilmore Girls. Do you have any questions for me about Dragon Ball Z Kai?
The only one I have is, why would you let Yajiro be near your baby, and why not take an extra diaper bag? There's no answers to these. You just shouldn't let Yajiro be near your baby.
No, and Bulma's not. I mean, this is Bulma's first kid.
You know, usually people are overprotective of their first kid, but not Bulma.
No, Bulma's pretty cavalier. She's always been pretty cavalier. So I have a question, actually. Yeah. And I have a bit of a beef with the people who cut for Kai.
Okay.
Okay, so the end of last episode was just Android 19 grabbing Goku and him having his power siphoned.
Yeah.
And then the narrator being like, oh, will the android steal Goku's power? Find out next time on Dragon Ball Z Kai. And that's it. And then this episode opens with Vegeta rushing in, knocking the android out and being like, yo, right?
Okay.
You should recut it so that the episode ends with Goku having his life drained, and then something comes out of nowhere and hits Android 19, and everyone's like, whoa, what was that? And then you slow pan up, and it's Vegeta.
That'd be good.
Cut to credits. Because then it's like, oh shit, Vegeta's here. I am definitely going to tune in next episode, because I want to see Vegeta fuck some shit up. Right? Like, that is the dramatic turn of the episode. Whereas the ending they gave us is just like, well, obviously Goku's not going to die here. So there's no tension in that moment. But if Vegeta shows up and you're like, oh shit, and then we go to credits, that's awesome. And that's the proper way to end the episode. You end it on the cliffhanger that's going to get you excited to come back, right? Yeah, so that's...
What Gilmore Girl question do you have?
I'm confused by this sudden shift where Lorelai is convinced that Richard's a master manipulator. That's always been her thing with Emily. Her thing with Richard has always just been that he's stodgy and set in his ways and kind of bullheaded. But now suddenly she's like, oh, this is how my dad is. He manipulates you. And that's never been her beef with Richard before. That's always been her beef with Emily.
Yeah. I think it's partially that Lorelai has archetypes for her parents, but they shift easily based on what she wants to get mad at them for. For one thing, we did see, like, it wasn't present here, but we've seen some of it before. We see Richard pull Lorelai in to go on to the date so he, you know, Emily's world can stay in order. But we also see that when she first had the kid, he was the one pushing hard for her to get married to Christopher.
Yeah, but that's not manipulating. That's just saying, Lorelai, this is what you should do because this is the proper thing to do. That's not manipulating.
But to a 16-year-old.
That's true.
No, I think it's really... It doesn't really say as much about Richard and who he is, but how Lorelai still kind of sees her parents like a 16-year-old would. And I don't know about you, but it seems pretty 16 to say... You know, to assign whatever bad guy labels you can to your parents based on the situation.
That's an excellent no prize.
Thank you.
In reality, it's just they needed something for Lorelai's emotional arc. But that is a top-notch no prize. I think that was my only question. We're both pretty light on questions. Do you know who you want to swap?
I'll let you go.
Okay. So this episode, I want to swap the androids, I guess specifically Android 20, with Rory and Jess. Because I really want, like, Luke running around in the forest trying to gotta find those goddamn androids, right? Just, like, with a jacket in case they're cold or whatever. But more importantly, I really just need, like, Piccolo being like, all right, everybody, Rory and Jess both went out and they staggered by 5 minutes. Vegeta rightly pointed out that they probably agreed to meet somewhere. So fan out and find them. Now, we can't sense their energy, but we need to find them. Do not confront them directly. Just, if you find them, find me or Vegeta. Or the break. And then just everyone running around and trying to find the teenagers making out among the rocks.
Okay. I'm going to pull an oldie but a goodie here.
Okay.
And I want to swap two groups that we did not see in this episode.
Okay.
I want to swap the Whiff and Poofs.
Okay.
With Captain Ginyu's squad.
Okay.
They would get into it, man.
Oh, they'd be a great acapella group.
They'd be a great acapella group.
And with poses and everything.
I want them to be happy. That's all I want.
Excellent. Well, I believe that's all this week for Gilmore Ball Z. So thank you all for listening. We'd love to hear from you on all of our usual social media channels. Facebook is Gilmore Ball Z. Emails gilmoreballz@gmail.com. WordPress is gilmoreballz.wordpress.com. And our Twitter is @GilmoreBallZ. We also have a subreddit, which is @GilmoreBallZ. We also technically have a Tumblr, which is gilmoreballz.tumblr.com, assuming it hasn't been flagged for being porn somehow. Because Tumblr is a dumpster fire. Please drop us a rating on iTunes, Stitcher, Facebook, Podbean, apparently, anywhere that you get your podcasts. And if we're not on your podcast app of choice, let us know and we'll do something about it. And once again, this week's Next Time on Gilmore Ball Z is brought to you by a donor to the Gohan and Rory Book Club Fund. And it is actually the same donor to the Gohan and Rory Book Club Fund as last time. So thank you once again for your donation. Take it away, James.
Who will find the androids first? Will Dean ever forgive Rory? Is Piccolo secretly a possum? He sure did know how to play dead. Find out next time on Gilmore Ball Z.